Let me read something for you from this book that I mentioned earlier by Lobsens and Blackburn that has to do with the basic relationships of husband and wife. You cannot review the case histories of marital conflict without reaching the conviction that there is something in the picture far more crucial than specific areas of conflict, such as sex, money, in-laws, and the like. That something, I believe, is the combined amount of emotional maturity in the makeup of the couples. The specific areas of conflict are simply the battlefields on which the immature personalities choose to fight. So we make a big issue of sex, or of money, or of in-laws, or of a given area, but that really is not the issue. The issue is our attitude in approaching those situations. This area that we're talking about tonight is one of those. Probably the key one. Marital counselors tell us that over 85% of all of the cases that come to them have to do with communications breakdown in one way or another. Now that's a pretty good hunk of the problems that exist in marriage today. 85%. Now, it goes without saying, then, that this is one of the basic needs that you and I have to develop adequately in our relationship with our husband or wife. And may I suggest that it makes no difference at what point you are in your relationship, all of us can profit from some of these principles to enhance and to improve our communications. This is not something just for young married people or someone just getting started, but some of us that have been involved in this for some time can profit by some of the principles that that we're going to be looking at. So we're dealing with this matter of communication as it relates to husband and wife. And in our introduction, I want to give you three basic scriptures to establish a scriptural premise for the matter of our communications. Amos 3:3 says this: how can two walk together except they be agreed? Now here in its basic essential is the reason for adequate communication. Just so that we can be walking together. Two people who are not communicating are not going to be walking together. They may be living together, but they won't be walking together. It makes a big difference. Proverbs 13:17. And I would like to read that for you from the Living Psalms and Proverbs, if I may. Proverbs 13:17. I've been reading through this in my devotional time daily, and I have been impressed with the freshness of expression from this little book. You can get it in the paperback. It's written in a paraphrase in our terminology, and it really makes some of these proverbs come alive. Listen to this one. An unreliable messenger can cause a lot of trouble. Now notice this phrase. Reliable communication permits progress. And that's precisely why in our relationship with our wife or husband, we need reliable communication so that there can be progress in our experience together. And then Proverbs 18:15. Again, from the Living Psalms. The intelligent man is always open to new ideas. In fact, he looks for them. You see, some of us allow our relationship in this area to ossify, to sort of harden, and it dies of hardening of the arteries. And we go on and on and on for years, not trying to think of new ways, not trying to think of new ideas, not open to suggestions. We think, that's done, we're married, and, you know, we'll live together, and that's it. And the bloom, literally, the bloom goes out of that relationship because of a basic breakdown in communication. This verse suggests that if we are really willing to seek new ideas, we will utilize the basic concept of communication as one of the factors. Now let's look at some primary conditions in this matter of communication. But just before we do, I would like to suggest to you some definitions regarding this matter of communications. In order that we know that we're talking about the same thing, I think it is wise that we look at some definitions so that we, as I use terminology and use a word or two here and there, we'll have the same idea, the same concept. These are definitions that I've taken, and I've given credit here to the sources from which I have gotten them. First of all, we have this one by the author of the book I showed you a while ago, Miracle of Dialogue, Rule Howe. And he says this, communication occurs whenever there is a meeting of meaning between two or more persons. Now, obviously, the key to that definition is found in these three words, a meeting of meaning, right there. Those three little words. That is what communication really involves. Not just a meeting of expression, even though it may be a meeting of intellect, but a meeting of meaning. Another definition. And this is from the book I suggested by Lobsenson Blackburn. Marital communication is making it clear to your spouse by word or touch or gesture, and this was suggested by one of the groups earlier, by word or touch or gesture, exactly what it is you mean or exactly what emotions or attitudes underlie these. Now, I'll leave that up for a few moments for you to be able to copy that off. I think it is an excellent definition. And again, the key are exactly what it is you mean and what emotions or attitudes underlie these gestures or words or whatever it is. This is communication as we are thinking of it in the matter of husband and wife relationships. Another definition from the writings of Dr. Henry Brandt, a Christian psychologist, and this is what he says, to communicate means to overcome the desire to conceal feelings and thoughts, and rise to the level of honesty of expression. To communicate means to overcome the desire to conceal feelings and thoughts and rise to the level of honesty and expression. Now that's fairly accurate, fairly clear, and easily understood. I have one other definition that I've incorporated on this sheet because we will be utilizing a good deal from the book The Miracle of Dialogue. And I think we need to understand what dialogue means. So here we have the definition of dialogue. Dialogue is basically address and response between persons. A flow of meaning between them in spite of obstacles. And there are obstacles to communication. Interaction between persons in which one seeks to give himself as he is and seeks to know the other as the other is. This is dialogue in communications. Not just the broad area of communication, but basic dialogue between two people, primarily, utilizing address and response, a flow of meaning in spite of obstacles, where one seeks to give himself as he is and understand the other as the other is. Again, I'll leave those up for a brief moment so that you can copy them down. While you're doing that, I would like to suggest one more scriptural verse as a basic pattern for the reason for communication between husband and wife. Philippians 2:2. If you'd like to jot that down along with the other verses that you have now. Philippians 2:2. Philippians 2:2 says this. Complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord, and of one mind. Now, this is a scriptural injunction to all of us who seek to follow Jesus Christ in any relationship that we have with another person, but more specifically, with our own spouse. Where should it be more important? Where should it start, if not at that very vital area of relationship? To be of the same mind, have the same love, be in full accord and of one mind. That's why we're interested in this subject of communication. Now we'll go back to our basic outline again and continue with this since we have our identification of definitions, and we'll start out, as I've already suggested, with the basic primary conditions. Primary conditions. Now let me say this. One of the problems in our marriage relationship is that too many couples just simply quit courting. When we're first acquainted and the husband is trying to win the attention and the admiration of that young lady, he goes to any extent. He'll spend his lunch money and his dinner money to buy something special for her and not think a thing of it. Something happens when we get married. And one of the things is that we just quit courting. Both of us. The wife sometimes gets careless in the way she dresses around the house. The husband gets careless in the little attentions that he could show her, like stopping by one of these places where for 96 cents you can get a dozen carnations. You know, a little gesture, or picking up a little tiny bottle of sample perfume for a dollar or $1.25, or bringing home something that's a favorite of hers. Any little gesture, we just somehow stop doing that. And this is communication at its basic level, where nothing is said, but where a great deal of communication takes place by a lack of attention and a lack of interest. Someone suggested that one of the things that is needed in communication is courage, and that is absolutely right. The courage to move into an area that needs to be opened up and discussed, even though you might be rejected, because you may be, depending on the attitude of your spouse. But communication is important enough for us to be willing to take that risk, if it is, in fact, a risk. Let me read a couple of thoughts from this man, Howe, from his book, Miracle of Dialogue. And this is what he says regarding this matter, the importance of this. He says, it is only through dialogue are we saved from this enmity toward one another. Every man is a potential adversary, even those whom we love. And it's only through dialogue that we are saved. Dialogue is to love what blood is to the body. When the flow of blood stops, the body dies, and so on. But dialogue can restore a dead relationship. Two people who are willing to do what we've looked at in these definitions can restore a dead relationship. No question about that. He goes on to say, indeed, this is the miracle of dialogue. It can bring relationship into being, and it can bring into being once again a relationship that has died. There is only one qualification to these claims for dialogue. It must be mutual and proceed from both sides, and the parties to it must persist relentlessly. It doesn't just happen. Just because we stood before a preacher and said, I do, I promise, doesn't mean that this just happens. We must persist relentlessly. The word of dialogue may be spoken by one side, but evaded or ignored by the other. There is risk entering into dialogue. Dialogue, therefore, is not easy and comfortable to achieve. But communication means life or death to persons. That's how important it is, and that's why we want to understand what some of these primary conditions are. All right? First of all, the desire for, or recognizing the need for this. You see, if we don't recognize the need, if we ignore this, eventually those two people who are supposed to be walking together turn from one another. They may not do it precipitously. It may not happen quickly. They may not do it violently, but slowly they grow apart instead of growing together. And so you have a case like the one I counseled not long ago of a young couple that had been married for 7 years who had never had meaningful dialogue. And as we spent weeks together, eventually it came through, and one day, and boy was I glad, because I was about ready to give up. I didn't seem to be making any progress at all. And one day, she finally said, you know, I don't think we have ever talked to one another. And he sat there and he said, I was thinking the same thing. In our 7 years of marriage, we've never discussed any of these things. We've just sort of lived and gone about our business. 7 years. Well, that's bad enough, but what about 20 or 25? The same thing can happen. And each year, the separation grows greater because there's not a willingness to work at it. There's no desire for it. There's no awareness of the need that exists in that situation. Second, the seeking after communications. This matter of courage that we were talking about. Proverbs 13:4 says this, the soul of the sluggard desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made strong. Let me read it from this Living Psalms and Proverbs. Lazy people want much, but get little, while the diligent are prospering. You see, it's not enough to desire. It's not enough to say, boy, you know, I really would like to have better communications. Because I think we recognize our need sometimes and we say, okay, I'd like to. But we're not willing to seek after, to work at, to express the courage and expose ourselves to the possibility of rejection. Third, there are certain qualities that a dialogical person must demonstrate as part of this primary condition. Let me give them to you briefly. First, that person must be total or authentic. We'd say real. Not put on, not a show. He must be real, total. A willingness to be himself, if you please. A willingness to give himself. Really present. We talked about listening earlier. Well, this is part of this total person who listens, who responds. See, it's one thing to hear, another thing to listen. Let me show you what I mean. I found this little cartoon the other day, and it sort of conveyed what I have in mind here in what I'm trying to share with you. Here are our two friends sitting there in their good husband and wife posture, enjoying an evening together. And she's reading something, and she says, first of all, this article is all about the lack of communication in marriage. And they sit there and keep on reading. And then she says, it says, many problems in marriage are caused by a lack of communication. And they continue reading. And she finds something a little interesting. And she says, aren't you glad we don't have that problem? And then, as you can already surmise, in the last picture, this is what we see. Dagwood, I'm trying to communicate with you. Well, this is what happens. This is what goes on in this area of the qualities of a dialogical person who listens, not just hearing, not just letting the sounds come, but listening attentively and responding to what the mate is trying to express. So we have the total authentic person. And then secondly, we have the quality of openness, self-revealing. Are you willing to open your heart, your life to each other? It's amazing how much we hold back for fear of rejection, for fear of lack of acceptance, for fear of rebuke, for fear of criticism. You see, this is what happens. The wife says to the husband, you know, I'm having a problem. I don't know why, but I can't seem to control my thinking along certain lines. And if he's not careful, he either criticizes or rebukes or corrects or in some way exposes her to his displeasure and lack of acceptance, or vice versa. The husband comes and says, man, I'm having a problem at the office. I don't seem to be able to handle it. I don't know what to do. And the wife, instead of accepting and trying to listen and understand and be encouraging, begins to correct, begins to make cute little suggestions without entering in to his situation. Communications requires not only a willingness to open myself, to reveal what's going on in me, but also not to be surprised when my wife reveals herself to me in some area that may surprise me. Nothing should surprise me because I know what goes on in my heart. We're both human beings. We both have similar problems. So there must be an openness, a willingness to reveal, but a willingness to accept the other person as they expose themselves as well. Third, the quality of a dialogical person must be a disciplined character or a disciplined quality. Look what it says here in Proverbs 13:3, again in this Living Psalms and Proverbs, from which I'll be quoting almost exclusively tonight. Self-control means controlling the tongue. A quick retort can ruin everything. A disciplined person, you don't just immediately say, well, I don't understand why you're having that problem. I mean, good night. It certainly doesn't seem to me like it's a big deal. And you just turn them off right there. Instead of listening and accepting and trying to understand. Someone has said that a good listener is one who has taught his ego to hold its breath. You don't just spout off and say what comes to your mind first. You listen. You let the other person know that what they are saying is important enough for you to give your attention to. And friends, that's not easy. That takes work. And that's why that definition we looked at earlier says it's a continual effort. A continual effort. It doesn't just happen. Fourth, the dialogical person must be related. Must be related. Incidentally, you'll notice that our outline tonight is much more brief. And I've done this intentionally. I'm giving you the main points here. I'm filling in over here. And if you're listening carefully, you're going to be taking notes of some of this additional material that I'm throwing out. Because it's not all going to be up there tonight. Part of what we're trying to do is get people to get into the habit of taking notes as they listen to whoever it is that's speaking. This will help you in your church attendance as well. What I mean by related is, this person responds to others. Responds to others. He's not an independent individual that just sort of ignores what they have to say. But he's a responsive person. See, many times independence demonstrates a spirit of uncertainty. Some men show an independent spirit because actually they're afraid to let anybody get too close to them, even their wives. So they act like, man, they've got the world by the tail, no problems, and all the rest of it. And down inside, they're just as uncertain and just as full of some fears as anyone else. But they're not willing to admit it. They're not a related person. They are unrelated to reality. And until we are willing to recognize some of these areas and recognize that it's not a sign of weakness to admit a problem. If anything, it's a sign of strength because we're seeking counsel. We're looking for help. A related person is a dialogical person. All right, let's go on to some of the basic purposes of communication. Purposes of communication. First of all, for information. Some of these were mentioned. We won't take a lot of time. But it's important to have proper information and to know that the meaning of that information was understood. For example, let me give you a story. It actually happened. People came to me and we counseled about this thing. They had a pizza party in their home one night, one Sunday night, after church. They had some couples over and they had a great time. Really had a good time. And as they were cleaning up after everybody went home, the husband said to the wife, "You know, it'd be great to have another one of these a couple of weeks from now." And they went on and cleaned things up, went to bed, and went to sleep. Nothing else was said. 2 weeks later, on a Friday, just before a Sunday, 2 weeks after, she was shopping, and one of their mutual friends came up and said, "Hey, we're sure looking forward to being at your house again Sunday night. We understand we're going to have another pizza party at your house." "Oh, we are?" She didn't say any more. She went home. What do you suppose she did? Not a thing. Not a thing. Her attitude was, "I'll just wait till he says something." So they went on. Sunday morning, as they were going out the door to go to Sunday school, he said, "Hey, are you all ready for tonight?" And she very innocently said, "Ready for what?" He said, "For the pizza party. Remember I told you 2 weeks ago when we were cleaning up that we ought to have another one?" Well, so they got home from church. She went ahead, fixed everything up, worked all afternoon, and in front of him told me there, she said, "Boy," she said, "down inside I was seething. I could have torn that house apart." He was sitting in the living room having a great time looking at the newspaper, watching a football game or whatever was on, and here I was trying to get ready for tonight. Because he hadn't told me. And so they kind of, you know, went through the night. Party went off fine. Nobody knew the difference. Now, 3 months later, they're talking to me about it. And you know all it was? Just a basic unwillingness to communicate on her part and a lack of plain common sense on his. See, and gentlemen, we're very guilty of this. We throw out a little statement, and we think we have communicated the whole thing. And we haven't. And if our wives don't pick it up, then we get after them about it. Instead of trying to figure out, well, let's see now, did I really say that? Did I communicate that properly? See, that's what we mean here by proper information. Making sure that it's understood. Not just tossed out. Okay? Second, for decision making. Boy, that's important. That's important. How can a husband make the right decision unless there is good communication? How can anybody make a right decision unless they have the proper information communicated to them? Someone said, talked about the matter of disciplining the children. Well, we're not going to get into that tonight because that'll come up in the other session that we have on children. But there's a good case in point. If there is no communication and no agreement as to how the children are to be disciplined or for what they are to be disciplined, then there is no standard accepted. And the children know this and they begin to play mom against dad. That happens quickly. It is amazing how quickly these children pick that up. And they know where they can go and find a listening, sympathetic ear rather than the discipline that will come from the other party. But you see, all areas of decision-making regarding finances, if there isn't communication, how many husbands I've talked to that say, yes, we take care of the finances. We give our wife a certain amount for the food and so forth. And I've asked some of those men, all right, tell me, when was the last time you asked your wife how much she really needs to keep feeding your family? Oh, man, we've been doing this for months. Right, doing it for months. And prices go up and the husband isn't even aware of the fact that prices go up, and so he's still giving the same amount and expecting the same diet and wondering what's happening. Both parties are guilty. A willingness to talk something like that over and make sure that it's adequate and being adequately taken care of. And on, we could go on like that. But the important area of responsible decision making. Third, interpersonal relationships. You see, we talked a moment ago in this little article from Howe's book on relationships that have deteriorated. And one of the main reasons is a lack of communication often. Just not talking things over. Not enjoying one another. By the way, I was talking to someone here tonight that came from the Springs, and they said, boy, we enjoy the drive up here because we get a chance to be alone together and we have a couple of hours, an hour coming up and an hour going back, and we can talk. Well, I think that's terrific. See, one of the keys to good communication is to take advantage of opportunities. Whatever opportunities present themselves. If nothing more than to tell the kids, look, we're just going to walk around the block, we'll be right back. And take a walk, just a little 5-minute walk. Or do something together. But it won't just happen, folks. Communications will not just happen. And if it's as important as we are saying it is tonight, we had better see to it that we're working on it. Both parties. I'm not talking to one or the other now. I'm talking to both parties. Because wives need to be willing to express their feelings because we don't read feelings very well. And we men need to be careful to explain what we mean when we say what we say, because sometimes we talk in broad concepts and not enough detail, and our wives need details. That's all there is to it. Fourth, for the development of the people involved, for the development of the persons involved. Let me explain what I mean. Put down this word, essentiality. Essentiality. That simply means making the other person feel important. When I sit down and talk with my wife and we converse, I want her to know that she is important to me, that her opinion is important to me, that I enjoy talking with her, that I think she thinks well, and that there are things she has to say that I want to hear. And when she listens to me and asks me questions and asks my advice, it's for the same reason. Maybe I can give advice once in a while, but mainly it makes me feel essential to her. And I want her to feel essential to me. This is a basic part of communication. A basic purpose for it. To let one another know that we think the other one is important. Important enough to listen to. Important enough to work at communicating with. Now, what about some problems in communication? All right, quickly. And we'll have to move along. But first of all, basically, the human heart is a problem. Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. There's our biggest problem in communicating. Follow that through with Isaiah 53:6. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. Now, I realize the context of that has to do with the broad aspect of removing ourselves from God, but the result of that removal from God is also a removal from people, and seeking our independent ways. And so you have marriages in which the husband and wife don't even work at communication. And they just decide, all right, you know, you'll have your experiences and I'll have mine and we'll raise the children and do the best we can and let it go at that. And it's an unfortunate thing. It's a tragic thing. It's a sad thing to see that kind of a marriage. But they're all around. And it's not limited to people who do not know Jesus Christ. There are Christian couples that I know in whose homes I've been where this is true. This very thing is true. We have turned everyone to his own way. And finally, John 3:19-20. And this is the scripture that talks about the fact that we are unwilling to come to the light because we don't want our deeds to be revealed. Let me read it for you. And this is the judgment, that light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. You see, there is something innate, something in each one of us that does not want to have some of the things in our lives revealed, even to those that are closest to us. In fact, perhaps mostly to those who are closest to us. Guys in the service will talk to one another about some of the terrible things that they've done that they wouldn't want their wives to know about. Or their mothers to know about. You see, communication, to be communication, must break that down. This is a problem in communication. Another one are some of the barriers that we find in communication. For example, the barrier of language. The barrier of language. And of course, we could go on with many illustrations on here, but I think you'll have to just get the idea. For example, take the word tired. The word tired can mean totally two different things to a man and a woman. The man comes home from work and he's physically tired. And he says, well, how are you today, sweetheart? Oh, man, I'm tired. And so he's thinking, well, yeah, she's probably a little tired. She's done some things around the house. He's thinking totally physically. She's about ready to climb the walls because the kids have been yelling all day. The faucet hasn't worked right. Something got caught in the toilet and she had to work on that by herself. And one thing and another, and emotionally she's drained. And what she's saying is, I'm tired of being cooped up in this house all day with everything going on. Can you get me out of here, even if it's nothing more than to go down to the park or go to get a soda or something? But unless we're willing to express that, the word tired doesn't communicate it. And there are many words of this kind that we use. And we need to examine them and make sure. And if we don't know, ask questions. What do you mean by that? You know, how do you feel? What do you mean? And so on and so on. Well, there are many of that kind, but we won't be able to. But another type of language barrier is the matter of the improper use of certain words. For example, you always do that. Or you never think of me, and so on. See, those are statements that are totally untrue. Nobody always does something, and nobody never does something. They may not be very consistent, but the unwise use of certain things. All right, next one is preconceived images. This is a barrier to communications. I hardly have to say anything. Just jot down the verse, Proverbs 18:13-17. Proverbs 18:13-17. Here's what these verses say. What a shame. Yes, how stupid to decide before knowing the facts. Any story sounds true until someone tells the other side and sets the record straight. There are always two sides to a situation. Preconceived images and ideas can terribly stand in the way of good communication. Boy, I remember one situation where I talked to a husband and wife who were having a problem. And the problem was, and they had been married a year and a half, and all this year and a half, She had been thinking that she had done the wrong thing, that she was out of the will of God to have married this young man because he did not fit the image that she had in her mind when she got married. He was not the spiritual giant that she thought she should have as a husband. He was just a man with clay feet like the rest of us. And that when they got married and she began to see some of the imperfections, she thought, oh, I made a mistake because he's not the perfect man I was looking for. Preconceived images. Foolish, but there they are nevertheless. Another barrier to communications is anxieties. This means that oftentimes we will approach a dialogue with someone and we are so anxious to get our idea across that we talk, and then while they're talking, we're not even listening because we're thinking of how we're going to make our next point in order to try to convince them. We're so anxious to prove ourselves right that we don't listen to what they're saying. So dialogue doesn't go on. It's totally one-sided, which leads us to number four, and that's defensiveness. Defensiveness. When we come to a situation and we've already built up such a defense to try and prove ourselves right, the dialogue couldn't take place if we wanted to, just because of the fact that we've already built up this defense. Proverbs 13:10, we won't look it up. You might want to put it down to look it up and check on later. And then, contrary purposes. Contrary purposes with fixed ideas. My mind is made up. Don't confuse me with the facts. We do this. We come to this matter of discussion, and oftentimes because we have a difference of opinion, neither one is willing to yield, and there we sit, kind of not going anywhere. The solution is to accept these barriers as part of communication, to know they're going to be there, to recognize that these are going to be present, but to be willing to work through them to a solution. That's what communication is all about. To recognize that these things are true, and then know that we're going to be able to work our way through these to a basic solution in some of the other areas that we have. Now, just briefly, our time is up, and we haven't quite finished, but I would like to just suggest this in closing. I'd like to suggest some principles from Luke 6:31. The first one is consideration of the other person. You can just jot these down, and perhaps next week in our early review, we'll go back over this just a little bit. But consideration of the other person. Luke 6:31 simply says that you're to treat someone else the way you want them to treat you. Basically, that's what it says. So, consideration of the other person. Don't assume we know how he feels. Clarify statements. In other words, think from his point of view as much as possible. Secondly, discipline yourself to make the effort to communicate. And we've talked about that. But this involves thinking through. It involves making time. It involves being honest and all these other things that we mentioned a while ago. And finally, a selfless spirit. Philippians 2, 3, and 4. Philippians 2, 3, and 4 says, don't do anything through strife or vainglory, that is pride, but in lowliness of mind, let each one of us esteem the other person better than ourselves. Better than ourselves. And that's what communication is all about. Now, three suggestions I'd like to make that I took from Mr. Shedd's book for daily action. Three suggestions. One, tell your mate, I love you. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how hard this is for some people to say. Why should I say it? She knows I love her. You know, good night. It's not that important. Oh, boy. Oh, I won't go into that. But I'm telling you, that, gentlemen, is important. Very important. Two, and I don't have to say the first one too much to the wives because they do it anyway. That's just part of their nature to tell us they love us. Two, do something nice. Now, that doesn't have to be something expensive. It may just be taking the trash out. Or it may be vacuuming when you get home. Or it may be some little gesture, but something nice for one another each day. You know, maybe it's fixing something that he likes when he gets home from work, or I don't know, but you can think. I mean, you're all imaginative enough to think. And finally, compliment one another. At least one compliment a day. I've had several wives come to me and say, well, what if you can't think of a compliment? Well, I got a couple of answers. I had one wife suggest one. She said, well, I could tell him how nicely he burps. But another one that came to me is this. Maybe the only thing you can compliment him on is the fact that he drops his clothes in a pile, at least, you know, not all over the house. But remember this final thought. Communications is two people working things out together, but as much as that, remembering that we have the plus factor, which is the gentleness of the Holy Spirit working in our behalf. He wants us to communicate. This is important to the whole program of God. This is not just something that makes our relationship nice. This is something that allows us to be effective for God. And you can rest assured that the Holy Spirit is on your side and will come to your aid on these issues that we've been talking about. And if you honestly seek to honor him in this area, he's going to enhance this part of your experience.